And good morning. I am Tim Flacco, actually sitting in for Steve today. He's out on assignment. I think he's out in beautiful western North Dakota, I think, somewhere. So he's busy doing some other things. I'm excited to be here. I have a great group of guests coming in this morning that we'll talk about a little later. Those include Robert Wilson, who is the chief administrator for Cass County. He will be here talking about the budget that the county passed. It's a preliminary budget, but it's a budget that after yesterday's passage, it cannot go up in terms of expenditures. So it's locked in. It can only go down from there. We also have Scott Wagner, who many of you recognize as a long time. He was in the county government for 12 years as a commissioner and currently serves in the North Dakota House from District 45, kind of North Fargo, Riley's Acres, Harwood, that area, Argusville kind of area. And then I believe we're still slated to have Governor Kelly Armstrong with his coming on. A lot of big things going on there in terms of special session, the ban on a drug that starts tomorrow. So there'll be a lot of very topical things, and I kind of lucked out. Sometimes you get somewhat topical that happened that week, and sometimes you get things that happened like last night or yesterday. So we're pretty excited. We have a lot of that yesterday kind of thing and last night. So a couple things here, too, I wanted to mention. I think we'll be doing a Vegas giveaway promo here during the show with Addison, who is joining me in the control room, keeping me on task, making sure I get to the breaks on the right time. I think We Fest is this weekend. Is that right?
I believe it is, yeah.
Boy, yeah. Are you going out for that?
Nah, not me, no. Yeah. I'll be at home sleeping.
Yeah. I've been there a couple times. Loved it, but I'm okay right now without it. But one thing, I guess, right or wrong, I'm going to comment on. I was to the Legion baseball tournament this weekend in Fargo, and, you know, there's teams from Fargo, two teams from Fargo, Post 2 and Post 400. There's Dickinson, Bismarck, Jamestown, I believe Minot was there, just some of the bigger cities because it was the top division. And it was great, except when after the champions were named, after they won a hard-fought battle, I was sorely, sorely disappointed that Fargo Post 2 did not act the part. I've been in baseball professionally and watching games and everything, and I've never been that disappointed. Some of the gestures, shall we say, that they made, including one player in particular, and I can't probably say too much of what that gesture is because Addison will bleep me, but it was a solo male activity. I think I can get by with that, and it was very just disrespectful. And what bugs me is the fact that it's the youth and the coaches are allowing that to happen. In fact, one of the fans said that one of the coaches did some things too. I didn't see that, but just the fact that that happened under their watch, I don't know that anything's being done about it, but part of me wishes that they would just take and sit that player down, at least that one, for the first game of the regionals because they won state. We're very proud of that part of it. It's just if you're going to state, if you're going anywhere, and you have the name of Fargo on your chest, you better act the part and not act like a bunch of petulant children because I was really disappointed in how they acted after the game, and it was just totally uncalled for. Like I said, I was with the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks general manager, and there's just a lot of things you do not do. And you have to be mindful of the fact that it's just not reflecting on you personally, but it's reflecting on the community that you represent. And it was just uncalled for, immature, and I don't know if some of the coaches that are recruiting for college or others are watching that, but those to me are signs that maybe that's a player you don't want to have on your college team because you don't want to have to deal with that because they can be just so-called terrible in the locker room. And we all know in the major leagues how some of the players that were terrible in the locker room causing others to be that way. But I hope Post 2, the leadership there, takes a look at that and has real – I mean, and don't give me this boys would be boys stuff because I don't care. You got to act the part. There's different expectations when you are in those roles, when you are representing a community, when you are representing the Fargo American Legion, you have a very different role when it comes to that. And I was just, Addison, I don't know. I mean, I've been, like I said, I was a general manager for years. I was never as upset in any game, win, lose, draw, we lost championships, we lost whatever, as after that game, because it was so uncalled for. Because some things you can control, some things you can't. Mm-hmm. And you just do not behave that way, win or lose. You act the part. And I just don't, I'm sorely disappointed. So there's my soapbox for the morning.
Understandable. So, I mean, a lot of people were pretty disappointed by how it went. So, yeah, it wasn't a... The ending wasn't thrilling there.
Yeah, and I'm happy, you know, a team from my community is going on to the regional tournament to play other states. But again, it brings up the point, you better not act that way around people from other regions, because mm-hmm. that's not good. Yeah. You know, and I look at it from politically. We have enough trouble in Fargo, Cass County trying to convince people that, you know, we're not that way. We're not above people. And then when they pull something like that, that's just, you know, that will be remembered by some for the rest of their lives because of what those a couple of bad actors did, we'll call it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I don't know, you, as you know, Addison kind of has to help me limp along. I'm not sure when our first break is. Is it the bottom of the hour or in 3 minutes? So I'll just go into the break here and then we'll have our first guest on, Robert Wilson. But a couple of this day in history, the U.S. created the U.S. Coast Guard in 1790 when George Washington signed legislation establishing it. Barack Obama was born on this day in 1961. And the one of interest for me is also the secret annex in Amsterdam where Anne Frank and her seven others family members were hiding were discovered by the Gestapo on this date. All were sent to concentration camps. Only Otto Frank survived. And it's one of the really great tour places that people are really drop-jawed amazed at when they go through it. And it's just one of those you walk into and you just have a sense of reverence and quiet as you move in. Marilyn Monroe, the actress, chief star of a sex symbol, such as Gentlemen for Blondes, later became a cultural icon, died on this day in 1962 after taking an overdose of sleeping pills, which, of course, is still pretty controversial and always will be, I guess. And then on this, actually tomorrow, the 33 workers that were trapped in the mine in Chile that were eventually released. I mean, that was really a story that captivated the world for a number of days there. And in 1957, Dick Clark, American Bandstand, made its preview with performers lip-syncing their latest songs and teenage audiences dancing being aired nationally. So 1957, so that's been almost, 69 years ago. So, and then you never think about it, but in 1806, Francis II dissolved the Holy Roman Empire. After a very, very long time in control. And on day after tomorrow, the atomic bomb was dropped over Hiroshima, which changed the course of the world forever. It's really captivating. There's some great stories about it. There's a great movie that came out here. Was it about a year ago? Year and a half ago, maybe? Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer,
if you get
yeah.
a chance to see it, if you get a chance to see it in a movie theater, even see it more so. But, yeah, it's awesome. And, we're going to have a great show today. We'll be joined after the break by Robert Wilson, the Cass County Administrator, who works out of the offices in downtown area in Fargo. And I'm Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve on the Steve Holstrom Show here on 1100 The Flag. And welcome back to the Steve Holstrom Show here on 1100 The Flag. And thanks again, Addison, for working the board in the studio. I always appreciate you being here and keeping me out of trouble.
It's nice to sit in the glass box every now and then. I have fun in here.
Yeah.
I'd have more fun if they gave me a window. It's the one room in the building without a window.
Oh. I didn't. You need to get one of those things like the curved mirrors they have on corners or something so you can see out a little better.
I think it'd be really funny if we just got a giant flat screen in here and made it look like there was a window, but there wasn't.
So why don't they just – okay, so those of you that are listening, I'm facing directly towards him, but I'm on his left. So he's facing away from the interstate, and he can't see out the window directly. But I'm not why don't they just turn you a quarter turn that you can face me directly, and then – you could see out the window.
You know, it's funny. I've seen old pictures of how this room used to be set up. That's how it used to be set up once upon a time. So, I don't know. Someone didn't like that setup. Someone with higher power than me. So, they were like...
Oh, actually, maybe somebody shorter than you. I couldn't see above the screens. That could very well be...
Might have been what happened.
Maybe Wysocki. Okay. So, my first guest today, I'm really excited to have here, is Robert Wilson, who is the Clay County Administrator from Fargo, North Dakota, living in Fargo, North Dakota. Code area. He has been in his role since 2017. He reports directly to the Cass County Commission and has supervisory and administrative responsibilities over all county functions, with the exceptions. And although I qualified, he's involved in some of the many of the things they do, but with the exception of the state's attorney and the sheriff's offices, which are, you know, which hold elected positions. So it's a little different in that regard. And Robert serves on the board of directors for both North National Association of Counties and the National Association of County Administrators. Prior to joining Cass County, Robert was an assistant commission administrative officer in Minnehaha County in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He's transitioned into a career in local government management after working as a local news reporter at television stations in Sioux Falls and Helena, Montana. Robert grew up in Seattle, and he's got a few problems with the sports teams he follows, but we're working on it. And earned a bachelor's degree from Willamette, okay. University in Salem, Oregon, and a master's of public administration from the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Welcome to the show, sir.
Commissioner Tim, it's great to be on air and join you here. I'm excited for the conversation.
Well, and later on, we're going to get to some of the budget. The county commission passed what we call the preliminary budget. That nothing can go higher than that. In general terms.
Correct.
So we're not going to. Once the mills are set, that's the highest they can go. And but we'll get to that later. But we're just going to start off with a few things before the break here to get to, so we make sure we get them covered before your time is up today. But so how many? One of the things we talked about yesterday was how many employees the county have. About how many employees does the county have on a typical week?
You know, off the top of my head, I think we're at about 560. That can vary from day to day, but authorized positions across all departments, we're right there at that 560 to 570.
Yeah. So, your budget, law enforcement is a pretty good chunk of that?
Law enforcement. Public safety, obviously that includes both. You've got the sheriff's office, you've got state's attorney, you've got the coroner. There's a lot of things that ultimately go into that public safety, public infrastructure, roads, bridges, those two are big drivers, obviously, in terms of employee count. Human service zone employees are technically county employees. There's a funding relationship with the state there. So really the responsibility of counties pretty uniformly across the country, and certainly here in Cass County in North Dakota, generally are law enforcement, road and bridges, and social service arena.
Yeah. So you talked about public safety. A number of months back, there was a soft opening and then a full opening of the new jail pod to accommodate additional inmates. And, again, if you want to text me, if you have a question, if you're one of the 10 people that don't have my text number, it's 701-367-5954. You can text me here or email us in studio, or call in, right?
You can call in. You can text the studio, 271-1100. That's both the call-in line and the text line for the show.
So, but how has the opening been? Are we kind of caught up now? I mean, we're not bulging at the seams already, are we?
You know, I haven't heard an average daily count for a couple of weeks, but that can fluctuate day to day. Generally, it's going to be higher on the end of a weekend, on a Monday morning. But it, I think we added 192 additional beds when the new pod opened, and you know, thankfully, we haven't gone straight to capacity with that, as we shouldn't, with a new addition that's going to meet our needs for several years. But it's always a process when you open up, and I certainly wouldn't want to speak for Sheriff Johnner or Jail Administrator Frobig, but I think generally it's gone well. It was very good for the Sheriff's Office, mm-hmm. and the community in general to have those additional beds, because prior to the new pod coming online, we really were at a deficit for the number of cells that they needed. And obviously you don't want to have jail as a first option in promoting public safety, but it's got to be there, and it's got to be there when you need it, and it's got to be there at capacities when you need it. And there were some times before that opened up where I know Sheriff Johnner was having some difficult conversations with the different police chiefs about bookings, and thankfully we are past that and operating with the new pod now.
Yeah, he had to make some tough decisions sometimes. It's like, okay, we need to have this new person in for sure, and we're full. Who can we safely move out? That's not a decision you want to have to be forced to make, because there's not enough room, but now there is.
There were a number of points there where I know Sheriff Johnner, Administrator Frobig, they were having some tough conversations. They were having some sleepless nights, and they got through it, and credit to them.
Yeah, I mean it's a challenging job working at the jail, and you know, managing the jail and making sure everybody's good and safe. Now this jail pod is better designed, we'll call it, with a number of features in it in terms of public safety, and actually it's better for the inmates, I believe, too. So
yes,
it's good. I think all the way around. And does that cost Cass County taxpayers money?
We were able to build that pod with ARPA funds because we did see a direct impact from COVID and social distancing that we're requiring and keeping people healthy. So we were able to access federal funds for that construction. To your direct point, did it cost local taxpayers anything for that addition? No.
Yeah, well, which is great. I mean, they were smart using those federal funds for that one-time expenditure, truly one time. So I'm Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve on the Steve Hallstrom Show here on 1100 The Flag. And again, if you want to give us a call in studio, at 701-271-1100. There we go. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve today. And again, if you want to give us a call us at 701-271-1100. Or you can text me on my private text at 701-367-5954. Yes, I do read them and get to them. And when necessary, so I get more than something from my pharmacy saying that I can pick up my prescriptions, which I got this just now. So we're joined by Robert Wilson, who is the administrator for Cass County here in eastern North Dakota, but I think a number of the problems that are challenged with in Cass County are those that are commonplace throughout many parts of North Dakota, a little bit in terms of size differences and things like that. But so let's jump right into the budget, Robert. Tell us kind of the process and how we got there, and what should people expect in terms of the budget.
Sure, I appreciate it. And obviously, the top of mind moment today is that the commission voted unanimously yesterday to pass the preliminary budget. You mentioned that means that between now and the final budget, when the final budget is approved at our second meeting in September 21st, statutorily it has to be approved before the end of September. That with once the preliminary budget is approved, the mill rate cannot increase. So the commission can go back, can reallocate funds that have been budgeted, could pull the budget down, but you can't increase the mill rate. So getting, and that statutorily has to be done by August 10th. So traditionally, we have approved that at the first meeting in August, which follows up on 3 days of budget hearings the end of July. This whole process starts back in the middle of May when the finance office pushes out financial information and essentially blank sheets to the departments. And department heads and their teams prepare their initial budget requests over the next month or so. Those have to be in by the end of June. And then over the month of July, there are a number of processes at work where the finance office is pulling together all the revenues, all the requests, meeting with departments. Did you really mean this? Is this going to work for you? Are you making sure that all the information is accurate and ready to go for the commissioners to consider when you have the budget hearings the end of July. We had maybe some unique factors that were built into this budget, or some things that we knew going into this budget season that we knew we were going to need to work through, as there always are. I like to think of a budget season almost as a sports season in some ways, that you have your ideas of how it's going to go when you get started, but often what plays out as you move through that process isn't 100% what you expected as you were going through that. And that really played out in a number of ways over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's a good process, an open process, and I think everybody has their chance to speak, whether it's a phone call, a stop at Hornbacher's with somebody that is on the commission, to yourself, to coming and testifying or weighing in with comments our meetings, and they'll have one more chance. Is that right? At that September 21st meeting, they can still provide input?
Absolutely. There is a public hearing required by law, a public hearing in advance of the commission considering final approval of the budget. And to your point, I think the transparency and the really request for more public input, public engagement in our budgeting process has been consistent from the moment I got to town. We have 3 solid days of budget hearings where every department goes through their department with their budget with the commission. All of those are open to the public. Obviously, yesterday, when the commission considered approval of the preliminary budget, and this information is also available on the website. I know commissioners take constituent calls. We take constituent calls in the commission, the admin office, but we would love to have more input, because there's a lot of times that we just don't have members of the public in the audience, and this is these are our friends and neighbors' tax dollars, and we want your input, and certainly want to be able to show you that the decisions that are being made.
So in the past, I really do like the process. The one big thing I like about over the years that the county does is they stay within the wickets. They stay within the boundaries of not drifting like some political subs do and start sponsoring this or supporting that, which are not really primary functions of that sector of government. And I really admire the county for being disciplined with the taxpayers' dollars in that regard, to say we're going to put the bulk of our money like in public safety, for example. But you have a balanced budget this year?
We do. Yep. We.
Meaning what? I mean, you're not taking reserves?
I'm just looking down here at our budget sheet that we that all of the commissioners were working off of, and yeah, we have for the 27 budget that was approved preliminarily yesterday and will be approved. You're looking at revenues of a little over $62 million just for the general fund, and expenditures that are $61 million. $911,000, and so that that absolutely is balanced. It brings up a good point, and something that a number of the commissioners have really looked to address over the last couple of years. Where I think the fiscal and financial stability of the county is fantastic, and that is due in large part not only to work that's done now, but to our predecessors. And you know, I know when I moved into this position in 2017, had a really good financial position to start with, and it was really then kind of on us to continue to move forward. But there's a couple of features within the budget that we've tried to tighten up over the last couple of years, but I can very confidently say we are all collectively very good stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, and like you said, to the credit for the people that went before, I mean, there's talk locally about, City of Fargo's got over $1 billion, of debt. I mean, it's in special, it's in all these little different things that are built there, but you... Cass County, true or false, no bonding in terms of general fund?
100% correct, no bonding.
So, I mean, it's nice to not walk into a situation where, 27% of your money is already spoken for in a budget.
Oh.
Because
a
bond that, that's owed on something that the taxpayers are paying interest on.
And I can tell you that's not only nice, that's certainly not the case everywhere. You mentioned another local government example. I would also tell you that that the county I came from 9 years ago down in Sioux Falls, Minnehaha County, it wasn't at all because they were irresponsible with their budgeting, but they didn't have the ability, as they had unique needs come up, in that case a jail, other public safety needs, had to bond. Now, mm-hmm. when I got here, we did have a bond that we were just finishing paying off. There was a bond for the courthouse expansion. I believe that was 2014, 2015. My dates may be off just a little bit there. So there was a bond there. That's been paid off, but at this point we have no debt.
Yeah, because I think the county is doing about a $12 million project where they're remodeling, refurbishing. They they added that one courtroom, et cetera, but no bonding for any of that. It all comes out of base funding, we'll call it. There's a special millage set aside.
Correct. We have a building fund, and that has 4.5 mills in it. And that, again, I go back to the wisdom of our predecessors. In that case, former auditor Mike Montpleasure made the strong case to commissioners when I was first in the seat that you need to have that because you will have future physical needs, capital needs. And if you have money set aside for that to build for those projects when they come up, then you don't have to bond for them. And so we have 4.5 mills dedicated to that building fund, and it's a lot of money, no doubt. But we're a growing county, and we will have needs, and so we are setting money aside so that money doesn't have to be borrowed or pull from other departments' current needs.
Yeah, I think one piece of data that was shared yesterday is that in 2016, roughly 10 years ago, the population in Cass County was 174,000 plus change. Today's estimate, 2026, is about 204,000 plus change. Again, those are estimates. So a growth of about 30,000 people over that time. So, you know, with that comes, you know, additional challenges. So I think we're up against the clock again, Addison. Is that right? 1 minute, yes. So, okay. Quickly then, how many, there was a couple to meet the, you know, the additional workload. How many FTEs? And where were they?
We added 6 new employees, 5 in the state's attorney's office, 1 in the coroner's office, directly related to public safety needs. We're a growing community, and we have expanded needs.
Yeah. And again, going back to that public safety focus, kind of number one for a lot of people. You know, you got the two big buckets is public safety and roads and bridges. There you go.
That's the core that's, of what
that's,
we do.
That's the county's budget
core
kind
of
thing.
Core of what
thing.
We do,
so,
absolutely.
I'm Tim Flacco sitting for Steve on the Steve Hallstrom Show, being joined by Robert Wilson. We'll be right back after this break. 1100 The Flag. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I was waiting for bumper music, and I found out there's no bumper music. So was that our sounder then?
And that is.
So we are going, Addison, not we, he's the hero here. He is going to take caller number, let's go with Joe DiMaggio, number 5. And you will be a qualifier to move into the next round, as they say. So caller number 5 for Addison. And then that's at 701-271-1100, I believe. So, and we're going to go right back with Robert Wilson while he's taking those calls. Robert, in terms of the county budget, What percent like raise what raises did we get in terms of the compensation package?
Sure, the preliminary budget included a 3% COLA and a 3.5% market adjustment in response to the compensation survey that was completed that showed where the county pay scales are compared to comparable. Markets and comparable organizations.
Yeah. I think the number I saw out of finance, thank you, Sarah, for taking all my emails over the weekend, the cost of a $200,000 house. Now, I mean, I know the average is higher, but we're just that's the kind of the standard that we usually go with. So you can just divide according to whatever yours is. We'll go up about $11 for the year. So a little under $1 a month for that. And I guess I ran some numbers right or wrong, but when you look at the population of the county, 204,000, you look at our budget, so it comes to about $299 per person for the entire year. So I think a good value, shall we say, when it comes to that. Robert, I know one of the things that the county has been working on under your leadership, Commissioner Grinberg and Commissioner Vettel in particular, too, is a public safety task force. Tell our listeners a little bit about where you're at with that. What's kind of bubbling to the top as far as suggested improvements, whether it's something that the county does, the cities do, combination working together, or if it's something that we take into the state of North Dakota for the 2027 legislative session. What's kind of percolating to the top there?
I appreciate this question because this is something that's really been kind of exciting to work on over the last couple of months. And I would say it started back in October and November last year. The commission, rightfully so, encouraged us to set up some meetings out in more rural areas of the county and just hear from residents who, you know, whoever shows up, what's on their mind, what do they like, what do they not like in terms of county government, what would they like to see. And when we have these conversations, valuation is usually near the top of the list. Feedback about roads and bridges, which roads need to be paved, which bridges need to be updated, law enforcement related activities, what they're seeing, what they'd like to see, how often they see a deputy in the area. And coming out of that, a couple of these meetings, there was just a sense that maybe we could do a little bit more on the public safety side. And I wouldn't even quantify it more specifically than that, just a an awareness of wanting to people wanting to feel a little safer in general. And so we put our heads together and put together a public safety task force. And so we've pulled together law enforcement leaders in the county, the sheriff, jail administrator, the police chiefs in Fargo, West Fargo, public defenders, probation and parole folks. And so that group has been meeting, really identifying some needs for folks who are experiencing pretty critical mental health crises and what should police officers, deputies do when they come upon these folks, because jail is not the right place for them. Often emergency rooms are not well equipped to handle them, but they clearly need acute care very immediately. And so that's a lot of what the focus of this task force has been, and I think it will be the bulk of some recommendations that will come out of the work of the task mm-hmm. force, most likely leading into the legislative session.
I just want to put a little plug in for Sheriff Johnner's office. I didn't know this until I became a county commissioner, but they'll actually go out and, like, for snowbirds in the wintertime, they'll actually go out, like, in this remote Durbin house and check on it once in a while if you ask them to check on it when they're being snowbirds. But, you know, so that just goes to that serving countywide. And you're also going to have, we're up against the clock, I'll just jump in with it, but you're kind of formulating a rural summit that will be kind of being fleshed out in the next few weeks going into the fall and maybe after the end of that. So thanks for coming on today, Robert. Robert Wilson, Administrator for Cass County. I'm Tim Flacco, sitting in for Steve on the Steve Holstrom Show here on 1100 The Flag. We'll be right back after this with Scott Wagner, representative from North Fargo. And this is actually Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve. I don't know. Addison, is he back tomorrow?
Yes, Steve tomorrow? Will be back yep. tomorrow. Yep. He'll be doing okay. the show from location, wherever
that's,
he finds
that's
himself.
Right. So. Yeah, that's right. He told me that he was from location, but he's going to be on hosting again, so... again, congratulations to qualifier Andy, who qualified for the final drawing for a chance to go to Vegas.
Yeah, so that gets him entered into the qualifying into our final qualifiers. Right. That yep. we'll be picking a winner at Kingpins on September 14th, I believe. Okay. So okay. Fingers crossed.
There you go. Our next guest, like I said, I got some great guests today, really topical stuff that's going on that's been just hitting the news yesterday, a lot of it. But Scott Wagner is a North Dakota representative from District 45, but kind of North Fargo, Harwood, Riley's Acres, Argusville areas up there. He's the owner of Wagner Window Cleaning, LLC, and he has his bachelor's from NDSU in political science. He was a former Cass County Commissioner for 12 years, involved both at the state and national levels, Government Award Hall of Honor that they received from the counties. Married to Greta. Good old push in for Greta. And then I always add this. It's not in your legislative bio, but he has Louis the dog. And he's been in the House since 2023 as I was getting some information earlier, is when from the treasurer's office, they passed a zero category for income tax. So that was one of the things that happened his first session. So, but he is here today, not necessarily to talk about legislative stuff, but he's a student, shall we say, of politics, political processes, really does his homework. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim. Great to be here. And to say on my list of priority, married to Greta is number one, and so people in our neighborhood in North Fargo, we've got a basset hound, Louie, yep. and he sits in the picture window all day. And so every neighbor that drives by, it's like, how's Louie doing? So I think he's pretty popular.
He's
on
pretty
the list.
Famous.
It's
yep.
Greta, it's Louie, then it's me, kind of in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I won't argue with that, right? Yeah, I know. I mean, even, you know, it's amazing how many people know our dogs when you have one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. Obviously, our spouses, so yes. So you're lucky. One of the things, you know, main thing we want to talk today about is there's a proposal to move to a ward system of voting in Fargo. I think that vote will come up on October 6th, which in itself is a, to me, an oddity that it, you know, couldn't have been worked out so they have it on the general election day. And I would note that sometime later today there will be a forum or debate between Arlette Preston, who supports the concept of wards and individual voting within those wards. You can't vote. You can only vote for one. And the other person who is opposing it is Fargo City Commissioner Michelle Turnberg. And, you know, just the facts of who's on which side probably tells a lot of people how they might want to think about that. So so give us a little background. And I'm just going to have you hit play, shall we say, because I in doing a little bit of research, I know not to the extent you did, but I see even like, you know, somewhat recently Minot has, you know, had wards and they got rid of that system to have people elected, you know, community-wide. So give us a little history. Give us a little perspective on what you think about wards.
Sure. If I can, I'll start with, during this past election, legislative session, I worked on a bill to get rid of special elections for bonding issues that required property taxes as the backing for the bond. Because what we were seeing was a lot of elections taking place where these 20, 30-year bonds were, which are very expensive. I mean, these could be, you know, $150, $200 million bond issues that were being worked around regularly scheduled elections. And so with bipartisan support, that bill passed that you can no longer have a special election for a bond issue that is backed by property taxes in North Dakota with a special election. It has to be during a regularly scheduled election when the largest portion of North Dakota voters show up to the ballot box. And so as a Fargo City a resident, taxpayer, and my service of 12 years in local government, these things are important to me, and especially even as a legislator, is getting that greater level of citizen engagement and in the election process. And so as you said, Tim, I think really started on this this particular issue, I find it just, the timing of it. Here we have people that have been that are part of the sponsoring committee that have been on the ballot for numerous election cycles, so they know when the regularly scheduled elections take place. And so if you had the intent of bringing this forward in 2026, you knew you had two statewide ballots. You had a primary in June and a November general election, where we've traditionally had in a midterm 43% to 45% eligible voter turnout. In a general election presidential year, it can go well over 60%. So that, I'm just wondering why that wasn't included in the question that was posed. The language of their initiative measure that says if it coincides the collection of the signatures and them being certified, if it coincides with one of the two statewide ballots in 2026, that it be placed on there, on that ballot. And even though they didn't do that, I guess the other thing is I believe these were certified on July 8th. So you knew you had a November election. Why didn't you just wait turning the signatures in to make the November ballot? Because what's now in play is a October 6th election 4 weeks later. We're going to have a general election where around 45% roughly, if we take a look at historical averages, of eligible voters are going to show up. We can have election 4 weeks earlier. And when I did my research for my bill on the special elections for bonds, this is why I raised this, there was just a lot of unique dynamics that took place, like working around regularly scheduled elections that were, you know, within a month to 6 weeks. But it's the voter turnout. It's like 7 to 12%. Even in our last primary election here, we had almost just under 21% voter turnout. So the stating that you want more engagement by the public in your first act is having something placed on a ballot that will draw the least amount of engagement of the electorate. I question that. I'm wondering, why did you do that?
So out of a city of 130,000, give or take, do you think what's the over under here? Do you think there'll be 9,000 people that vote?
That's probably Yeah, if. I mean, that's probably a good number, that 9,000 to 10,000 maybe.
Yeah.
You know, there again, why didn't you wait a month? You know, you could have timed this, or you could put it in your language mm-hmm. that it could coincide with the election if you want greater participation. Because we're seeing it at a national level. You know, we're seeing that, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to tie this in any way to that. It's the issue I'm about to raise. But, you know, it is kind of interesting that, you know, the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America here, we're hearing this discussion about if you don't like outcomes, it seems like just overhaul your government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's – and I don't know how much – did you, when you were researching, did you get a ballpark number on – I know Sarah the Finance gave me a number as far as how much it'll cost by having a special election again.
Yeah, I think it'll be over 100,000. I mean, the city's got to run this themselves. They can't have the county help on this. So there again. And usually, like I said, usually the special elections are used special election is a lot of times, and people were well-meaning in what they were trying to do, but they're so concerned about it passing. There's where those special elections, because the people that are for something usually are the most motivated mm-hmm. to get out on
right.
it.
Yep.
And, you know, we've seen that in the past.
I mean, the hockey people do a phenomenal job. I mean, you know, if they can get something on the ballot, you know, they're good at mobilizing their group to get out and vote in support of it. And they've really done some, big votes across the United States by having those kind of separated out and then just run with it, with knowing that the yes votes are going to be there.
Well, we've had votes in September for school bond issues and right after a general election. You know, we've had votes in December after a November election. So,
yeah. I am Tim Flacco sitting in for Steve on the Steve Holstrom Show, being joined by Representative Scott Wagner, talking about the proposed Fargo City election changes that it will be held at a special election on October 6th. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to the Steve Holstrom Show here on 1100 The Flag. I'm going to jump right into a couple things. We have a caller, but first we're going to go to – I have a text message on my private text message, which people use. Yes, they do, and that's good. From Derek, a radio listener, he said they had a deadline where they couldn't wait any longer before turning in their signatures. Scott, you want to handle that? There's just a certain window of they could have started later or some of that language, I believe, to get it on the general.
Well, they could have wrote it in the language of the ballot measure. That's why I don't understand. I mean, I think it said 60 to 90 days, but, well, put it in the language.
Yeah. Because I know with some of the things, they used to have with the state fair, et cetera, they had so many days to get it on, to gather their signatures and everything. But, start your campaign a month later so you can get it on the fall ballot. I think it's part of it too, so, Derek. So thanks for chiming in there, Derek. And we have a caller. Crystal is on the line. Crystal, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi there. And thanks so much for Scott being your guest today to talk about this. I think it's a problem that is waiting to happen. There isn't a problem. People have not been complaining about the city commission. And I think Arlette and her group just kind of got a bug up there, to try to make some kind of a change for whatever reason. And when you said earlier that Minot had it and then got rid of it, I think that's a very valid thing. We've been doing very well in Fargo with representatives from across the county, the city. So we've had business people, we've had civic-minded people, we've got regular homeowners, good cross-section all the way across. And so, Scott, I was wondering if I could invite you to come to the Avalon on Wednesday night, and we're having a discussion between Arlette Preston and Michelle Turnberg. There's an open bar at 5:00, and seating is 5:30 with dinner, and I think it's about $20, maybe $22, something like that per person, and the program starts at 6:00. Does that sound like something that you could be at, Scott, so you could help bring some common sense to this whole discussion?
I am aware of it, so I am trying to make it my schedule available for it. So, okay. And I do know about it. So thank you very much, Crystal. And I would say just to anybody in the public, for you raising that to come out and to listen and get engaged in this issue. So thank you for your engagement and paying attention. This is very important.
So, Crystal, I'm going to jump the question.
When you were talking about the deadline of planning, they didn't plan well. Because if you want a good turnout where you get pure democracy then, what they're always talking about, and true fairness, what they're also talking about, is you would have the most people available to vote either in the primary or in November.
Yeah.
So Scott's got some very valid points. Well, thank you so much.
And he's going to, Crystal, if you listen after you hang up here, Scott's going to tell you something. I'm going to ask him a question which I did not know about until this weekend. He and I had a meeting. The question being, Representative Wagner, has Fargo ever had a ward system before?
It has. Excuse me. Yes. In fact, in 1913, Fargo replaced its ward-based political system with a commission-style government. It wasn't working for Fargo in 1913, and I think they saw the vision of a commission style of government. And so why would we go back in time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you serve in the legislature, but you think about if somebody's got a problem and they have, you know, like they're one, you know, they're one person. I mean, if you go to a ward system, are they going to, you know, call the other person, you know, the person, if you live in North Fargo, are they going to call it in South Fargo, South Fargo, North Fargo? You know, they're going to go, not one of my voters. Call your person, you know, yep. He or she. I mean, I worry about that. And then being homers, I know there's a name that used to be a Moorhead in Moorhead city government that was a big homer and didn't care about doing the right thing for the, you know, the community. It was more about, I need to keep this in my ward.
Well, you kind of looked at their North Fargo moved away from a system that I think what was recognized was a system that created neighborhood favoritism, patronage in my neighborhood first. I think this potentially more divides Fargo than unites Fargo as a city. And stop and think something you're touching on, Tim, is the fact, you know, this is touted as greater representation. In my mind, no, it is not. It is isolating your representation. Because if we move from 4 to 6 commissioners, roughly, you know, you get a vote for one ward. That means the other 5 commissioners, you don't get elect. They're not directly responsible to you at the ballot box. And so 80%, about 83% of the commission under a ward system doesn't answer to you because you don't get a vote for them. And so into the current system, you elect all of your commissioners. That means they all represent you. And so say you have a ward where that individual maybe just isn't working as hard or as accessible. What counselor in another do you go to advocate for your issue in your neighborhood that they're not accountable to you at the ballot box? They're not your counselor. They're not your representative. I just think that insight of the fathers of our city over 100 years ago to say we are one city and we need to look at all of our citizens and that all of our elected officials, you know, are accountable to all citizens. Because right now you have 5 representatives. You have the mayor and you have 4 city commissioners that are all responsible to you.
So I think one of the things I worry about is how few votes it will take to win. You know, you divided up the city of Fargo up into 6 areas. I think, in theory, you could win with 1,500 votes.
Well, I think even less. Roughly doing the math, because I believe it will have to go off from, you know, apportionment from the census. So we're going to the 2020 census. So what was Fargo? About 125,000. So I think roughly a little over 20,000 people per ward. So if you have 4 or 5 people running, so right now, and I think there is underlined, say, tweaking what we're seeing is kind of the election, you know, people are like, right now we have a process, and this is good that we have a lot of people that want to run for office. So over the last decade or so, we have had people, up to 15 people, vying for two seats. This last city commission, 9 for two seats. 17 or 20% voter turnout, a little north of that this election. We've had some as low as 17%. Mm-hmm. So people are winning by fractional pluralities and, you know, 17% of the vote winning a seat. And so people have been concerned about that, not getting to a greater mass of voters. But you're going to retract that even more. People could actually win with a few hundred votes under this system. To me, that's you're moving representation backwards. You're not moving it forward.
Yeah. I just don't like that part of it. Now, I'd be totally different if they were like the county where you're
at large.
You represent an area, that's where you live, yep. But everybody votes for you at large. So thanks, Scott Wagner, for being on today. Appreciate it. I think we learned a lot. You have to bring a great perspective to this in terms of some of the shortfalls that are existing out there. And if, I guess, people have to figure out if they can live with it or not. I do worry, the breakout and they talk about sometimes that downtown Fargo gets so much given to them because of the composition. It's like, I don't even know who for the commission is from the downtown. So anyway, I'm Tim sitting in for Steve and the Steve Hallstrom Show. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. We're on the home stretch at about 10:32:27-ish. And I think, Addison, did you get some information, I think, on that event at the Avalon, which I think is actually today?
I did, yes. So that is happening today, not tomorrow. So just a quick little correction, Nate. I believe that was mentioned that was happening Wednesday.
But okay, yeah.
Yeah, so happening today, in case anyone would like to attend that event.
You know what? And then those times, like 5:30 and et cetera, in the evening anyway.
That I did.
Late afternoon, evening. So, and again, if you want to give us a call, call us at 701-271-1100. And I am excited to be joined by our next guest. Very timely stuff. We have the greatest governor in the United States of America on radio with us. Welcome to the show, Kelly Armstrong.
I bet you say that to all the governors.
No, I don't talk to all the governors. some very intentionally. Hey, I got a weird question for you. You coached the Bismarck team. I don't think it was the Larks technically. It was what, the Ditch Diggers or something like that?
The Ditch Chickens.
Ditch Chickens, there we go. AKA yeah. Pheasants, right?
Yep.
So are you a winning coach now? I never heard the outcome of the game.
Walk off home run in the bottom of the ninth. Two outs, nobody on. Guy got a single, another guy got a single. They were down by two runs. The kid's last at bat with the Larks before he went back to college, and he hit a home run.
What?
It's Cinderella
story,
like
Hollywood,
man. It was awesome.
Hollywood scripting this for you guys, or what?
100%. It was so freaking cool.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that you do that kind of so-called everyman stuff. You're out and about just wherever you need to be, wherever people want you, doing things that you're not afraid to get your hands dirty at and not afraid to get yelled at from the stands,
And we raised a bunch of money for charity to take a bunch of kids hunting. So you combine my two favorite things in the world, which is hunting and baseball, and you get to do some cool stuff in this job.
You know, I can't imagine the governor of Illinois doing that. I mean, they would have like an entourage of 12 secret security agents hovering around him. You could never even, if you're batting, you could never see the signal because, he's enveloped by a bunch of Secret Service agents, and you're just being Kelly.
Yeah, I got to coach first the whole game. Easy place to go, run fast, turn left.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Watch for pickoff moves. I got to dust off my old coaching career. It was a lot of fun. It really was. So, and also, this is a competitive season. We're trying not to be a distraction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they got a baseball game to play.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So a lot of big news out of the governor's office, out of Bismarck this week. First, let's start with the you've put a ban on a specific drug that can be bought at a gas station over the counter. And just to give you a preface of, I contacted Christy from our coroner's office, and she said, year to date, there's been two deaths that they've had in their system. That were where they found the drug in their system. It wasn't necessarily the primary cause of death, but it was found in their system. So let's walk through the drug ban and the call for a special session.
Yeah. So first of all, this the DEA is coming out with an emergency order that goes into effect August 5th, which will level synthetic kratom as a Schedule 1 drug. The pharmaceutical board asked me about 3 weeks ago if they could get a letter from me so that our pharmaceutical emergency order mirrors the DEA order. We can do all of that. We were going to do all of that. The problem is the DEA doesn't do on-the-ground enforcement in North Dakota. And we can't create criminal penalties with an executive order. So we're going to do those things. But what I don't want to happen is to have our law enforcement to be unable to actually enforce that once it goes into effect. And I can do a lot of things from my office, but I can't create crimes. So we have to call them in for the special session to make sure that the legislation matches what the DEA order and the pharmaceutical order does. Separately from that, I did a emergency health order yesterday banning all natural kratom for 30 days. Now, that's the one that will probably have significant. I hope the first one doesn't have a lot of debate. If the DEA says it and the pharmacy board says it and local communities are saying the same thing, it should be pretty easy to do. More importantly, we don't always like federal law, but our drug code should match, at least match what the federal law says. Right. The second part is the natural kratom, and my health experts tell me that the thing about synthetic kratom is it's just a higher dosage, and once that is off the market, that people who are addicted to this stuff are going to take just significantly more of the natural kratom. But it's completely unregulated. There's no age restriction. My kids could walk in and buy this stuff right now. So we did that emergency health order. After COVID, the legislature changed a law that said they could bring themselves in within 30 days after an emergency health order. The problem with the legislature bringing themselves in, Tim, is they can pass a bill by majority, but to make it effective immediately, it needs to have an emergency clause. Otherwise, you got to wait 90 days. Mm-hmm. And so I thought rather than forcing them their hand into determining whether or not they wanted to come in or not, I said I'd just call them in because I think our criminal law and our penalties should match the orders that we are actually doing. I think there'll be a tremendous amount of debate about the natural occurring kratom. I personally believe it should all be banned. If it's not, there has to be an age restriction and there has to be a penalty for mislabeling because this is just a completely unregulated market. Like you buy a pill and it says the dosage is 1/4 of the pill. Well, that's not why it's being sold in pill form. Nobody sells a dosage and says when you go home, you should break it into fourths. I mean, that's just not how it works. And we have to make sure we get the synthetics off the shelves. I think we need to get the natural stuff off the shelves. But so we have 30 days to do all of that, and I'm going to bring them in, and hopefully they can pass some legislation that mirrors, like I said, the DEA order and put some guardrails at the very least and hopefully a ban on all this stuff.
You know, I wondered, I don't know, I mean, if a lot of these convenience stores or whatever had any idea that this kratom causes big problems, and they may have voluntarily, you know, even ahead of your order or taking effect, pulled it off their shelves, I hope.
Well, anecdotally, there's a reason it is. There's a lot of space dedicated to it in some of these stores, and yeah. I mean, it's incredibly addictive. We've really only been testing for it in North Dakota since 2025. I was a lawyer when the meth thing blew up in the early 2000s. I've spent my entire political career dealing with opioids and fentanyl. I don't think you wait for something to become a pandemic or an epidemic to deal with it.
Yeah.
I didn't really know. I had not heard of kratom until my lawyer came in and told me that the pharmaceutical board was doing it. But, man, in the last 3 weeks, I've learned a lot about it, and none of it's good.
Yeah, I'm in that camp until you started talking about it. I had no idea. And then I'm like, well, you know, I didn't understand until it was explained, you know, by you and a few others, why there was such a rush. I didn't realize that it was really commonly available, you know, much like going and buying Crest toothpaste. I can go get it easy. Nothing to it.
Yeah, so can my kid.
Right.
Like, so can my kid. Either of my kids could. But the reason for the rush, one, because we have 23 cases in North Dakota where it was listed as a primary cause. That doesn't mean it's the exclusive cause of death, but at 21 and 50 in which it was in their system. But the other reason is because I don't want to do these things by executive fiat for two reasons. One, that's a lot of power for one guy to have. Yep. Two, I used to be a criminal lawyer. I prefer to have orders in place that are enforceable. And three, I want law enforcement and local communities to have the tools that they actually need to enforce this stuff. And I don't think you can do that by executive order. Mm-hmm. And it's really not waiting 4 months till the legislature comes in. It's waiting a year, because you and I both know if the legislature passes a bill, again, without an emergency clause, it doesn't go into effect until August of next year.
That's 23 more dead
putting
people.
Everybody. Turns out drugs are not legal and they come off the shelves, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not being sold.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to any law enforcement agent across the state to have an executive order that becomes really, really difficult to enforce.
Well, and I hope our state's attorneys, it's one thing to arrest them, but I hope our state's attorneys prosecute them too, because, there's some of that edge borderline stuff that goes on across the United States and even in North Dakota, where they go, I know this is a law, but I don't really agree with the law. And I just hate that when that happens.
I agree with that, but I'm also not. There's some nuance to this, right? I'm not interested in creating a kid who's addicted to this stuff, an 18-year-old kid who's addicted to this stuff, and he could buy it legally a month ago. I'm not interested in making him a felon for the rest of his life. Like, that's not helpful. So we got to work on, the ban on the synthetic should be the easy part. The rest of it is going to be a very vigorous debate at the legislature, but also the nuances of what the penalties are and how we deal with it are important.
Process-wise, will there be a bill drafted, or it's probably in the process or well along the way, that will go before a delayed bill committee, and then they would vote hopefully to pass it to get it a hearing set up? Is that how it works? And then it's treated like a regular bill?
Yeah, the plus side for me calling them in is it's a 50-plus-1 majority for it to go into effect immediately. The downside is it's a legislative free-for-all. Any bill that gets through delayed bills, we'll get a hearing. But my understanding, I'm not in charge of the legislative process, nor do I want to be. I have enough going on in my life. But they're going to run it, I think, very similar to rural health transformation, where they set up joint committees and work through these things. And, they need 3 days to do this adequately. And so they'll come in second, third, and fourth, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think those delayed bills committee are generally assigned by the majority leader, who has a pretty tight hold on people that aren't going to go out and just have 20 bills passed. Now you have a full-blown session again.
Yeah. This is making sure that our what we are doing at the executive level and with the input of the experts in this field, whether it's Health and Human Services and pharmacy, match what the criminal code says in the legislative process.
We're being joined by Governor Kelly Armstrong, one of my favorite people in the entire world. We'll be coming back after this break, but if you want to give us a call, you can ask Governor a question, because North Dakota has the most open and accessible governor in the United States. You can give us a call at 701-271-1100, or you can text me at 701-367-5954. We'll be right back after this with Governor Kelly Armstrong. And welcome back to the Steve Halstrom Show. I have the honor of being joined by America's favorite governor, Kelly Armstrong. And Kelly, I just want to give you a little update. Last night, the Cass County Commission passed their preliminary budget, which we can't go any higher. We survived well under your 3% cap language that was invoked by the state. We may have some challenges going forward with law enforcement and public safety in order to be competitive, and in order if we need a new jail pod. So those are some of the things we're monitoring, because, for us, law enforcement and roads and bridges are really the top of the list. And the things we're competing with in terms of employees are Fargo, West Fargo, and Morehead all have like a dedicated sales tax, and we'll never get that countywide, because if Fargo and West Fargo have already voted to do that, they're not going to add something on. So it's just something to keep track of. But we were able to give nice raises, fair raises to our employees to in order to best keep them. So I just wanted to give you that a little bit of an update. So.
Well, that's good to hear. And it's not like we can't have conversations about it. I think one of the unfortunate things that happened last legislative session on the property tax measure is that because it got dragged, there was a reason I wanted it out quick, is because then we could have sat down and talked. I mean, cities and counties and large counties and small counties, I mean, all have little nuances that we are not against having those conversations. Mm-hmm. But when it turns into, you know, trying to kill a bill, because you and I have been here a long time. I mean, the state basically accounts for roughly 50% of property tax in the state with all of our buy downs.
Right,
and
right.
The problem is it's never really reduced anybody's property taxes. So the program's been popular. Now it's time to make sure that it's actually workable for people going forward without busting it open. And with all due respect to my friend who's a county commissioner, allowing the locals to backfill it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to watch for that because, I mean, I think we're 26% below the cap. So, you know, county in the past has been real good about not spending money unless they absolutely needed to. So, kudos to those that went before me.
Yeah, and I mean, but you and I were there when we took the social service. Were you still there when we took the social service mills?
And transitioned
and
it over.
We never had a our conversation was about whether it was going to take away local control. It was never about whether those mills got backfilled immediately by other parts of the county, and unfortunately, that's what happened. Right, like we bought the mills off at the state level, but it didn't really do a whole lot to reduce property taxes. So there has to be a carrot and a stick, otherwise, we just continue to backfill local governments instead of property tax relief for homeowners. But like I said, we're not absolute in everything. We always want to make sure it works. I'm actually one of those guys that appreciates what you guys do, and local control matters, and we have to make sure we protect some of the autonomy of it.
Yeah, and I hope local control, you know, persists. You know, there's a lot of talk about special interim committee. We've had people on talking about it. So AI and data centers, I just hope they remember to keep the local control component in some areas. You know, we don't need a cross the board in a lot of areas, but.
I don't disagree with that, but I'm also not particularly interested in an entire another level of, you know, bureaucratic regulation. So that mix and match is going to have to, I mean, is great. I mean, you know, and we know this, right? Like not every oil well is drilled in the middle of nowhere. So, I mean, there are oil wells in Western North Dakota that are within city limits. Dickinson has them, and that was pre-Bakken, right? That was old Lodgepole well.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go get your permit from the Industrial Commission, and that doesn't take away locals' control over zoning and road weight and, I mean, things that are really important. What it's not, what locals can't do is start talking to you about your downhole technology or what kind of pit liner you have in your well. I mean, so there's a place for this stuff.
Yep.
It's just we got to make sure we know what locals want to retain, what would be more important for, like, not raising utility rates on end-use consumers is something the state can do, and we should do for any of these projects.
Yeah, and I think you have a perfect answer in terms of there's some things that, like, the county and the cities hope the state, you know, weighs in on and works through it, and then there's some others. We got two minutes left there, Governor. Any predictions? I mean, right now, the legislature, when you get in there, they're going to kind of control what makes it to a hearing. Do you think there will be a bill on the, you know, it's being talked about on the museum that makes it through for a hearing and discussion?
Yeah, I think there will be some funding mechanism at least to get us through to the next legislative session. I'm hopeful there is, but I mean, again, that's up to legislative leadership as to whether or not they want to do that. I don't want an empty. I mean, they at the very least they have to be able to fund the winterization of the project. Yeah. So,
you know, and I'm kind of in your camp. Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
And you know, on the we're down a minute or so, but on the mandatory school meals that's in the Constitution. I have a problem with it being in the Constitution. I asked the treasurer how many people in North Dakota, how many North Dakotans pay income tax. It's about 125,000. So it's roughly $590 per North Dakota filer that will, based upon how much they pay. So, I mean, nothing is free.
It's taxpayer funded school lunch, and it's a worthy debate, and it's been had, but I don't like it in the Constitution either.
Yep. So we appreciate you. We appreciate that you're everywhere and the great job you're doing. And even, you know, people of all stripes and beliefs think, yeah, he's doing a good job. I mean, and you know, and that's people that we know that didn't vote for you. They like what you're doing. So thank you very much, Governor, for being here.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm Tim Flacco, sitting in for Steve on the Steve Holstrom Show. Later on, if you want, I believe there's a podcast available if you want to share it with your others or friends and family. So have a good one. Steve will be back tomorrow. And stay safe, everybody.